You're listening to the AID Network.
Hey friends, happy Halloween! We all did it. We survived another Creep Week, but will we survive another Halloween? Check your candy sacks, check your treats for no tricks, and take out a lantern or a light when you walk the streets tonight. Remember to hear all 38 Creep Week episodes that live in the Adventures in Design Crypt. You must be in the cult known as the Circle of Trust. Sign up today at AID.network. Friends, coming up next week on the show, November 4th through 8th, it's Adobe Max Week on Adventures in Design, presented by Seltra. Interviews, reviews, and breaking news all captured from the Adobe Max floor. It's made possible by Adobe, Dapper Notes, and Seltra, the creative management platform where creative and marketing teams collaborate to design and deliver campaigns across the ever-growing number of media channels and markets. Seltra, where creatives come to scale. CELTRA.com. So let's talk for a minute. Before we bring Alex on and his special guest, let's talk for a second. Why Halloween? Or ask, why any holiday? Why do we do these traditions every single year? There are many reasons, but tradition is a big part of the human condition. When a thing like Halloween pops up on the horizon, when you start thinking about it in August or September or the first week of October, it reminds you of all of the Halloween's past. Reminds you of how far your journey has come. Because as humans, we're obsessed with our lives. We're obsessed with the little bit of precious time that we are given on planet Earth. And every story that's told honestly is a story about death. That's not unique to the world of horror and Halloween. But the best thing about these annual traditions is they make life fun. Those little bumps in the calendar, a reason to celebrate, a reason to decorate. I didn't realize this about myself. I'm not really a get dressed up for Halloween guy. I don't really care if I get any Christmas gifts, but I'm a decorations guy. I love the pageantry of the holidays. I love when a normal street becomes orange, yellow, and brown, and then turns its way over to green and red for Christmas. Everyone likes a party, and every city looks more fun and full of life when it's decorated, adding in an extra layer of design, an extra layer of attention, and an extra layer of celebration. Holidays, simply put, make life fun. And that's what life should be. We're each chasing the idea of what makes us happy. And I hope for you, holidays are only just a little cherry on top of your life's fun. Today's episode features Alex Party and Rocum, who are on a quest to make life fun and to make shopping fun. As an adult, there's so many stupid and insanely dumb, responsible things that we have to spend our money on. So the things that we collect, the things that make us happy, that's the reward at the end of a long work week. I don't ever think of paying my health insurance as a rewarding thing that I get to do. I don't ever think of paying my rent, paying your mortgage as a fun thing that you get to do. The fun thing that you get to do is go to the movies, go to Disneyland, or go trick-or-treating with your kids. I'm happy to have Alex back on the show, and I'm happy to share the story of future me, and more importantly, making shopping fun, the reward that you get for all of the hard work that you put into this world. And honestly, I don't know many people that work harder than Alex. Can't vouch for Rocum, bit of a shady character that I just met. But I'll tell you this, a key part to being successful in today's new world of new media is you got to make sure that you're telling people more about your journey than you're trying to sell to people. If you're constantly just saying click, buy, sell, follow, hashtag, you just become white noise. But if you take people on a trip with you, if you're vulnerable and you say, this is something that I just wanted to make because it's dumb enough that it should exist, and you share with people in an honest way what it is you're trying to make, you will catch the best reward of all. an audience of friends, not followers. And maybe, just maybe, you'll earn the freedom to make what you dream of. Today's episode is all about the long and hard struggle to get from point A to point chimpanzee. The evolution of dreams, ideas, and projects, and how in today's world, you got to find a way to make it fun. And speaking of fun, would you like a free Jason Edmonston illustration of Frankenstein's monster? Not Frankenstein, his monster. And hey, would you want a free Future Me toy from Alex Pardee and Roke of Toys? All you got to do to win one of those two items is post about any episode of Creep Week on Instagram and tag it. Hashtag COT till death. Someone will win a Jason Edmonston illustration, someone will win an Alex Pardee toy, and that someone should be you. A Halloween treat from Adventures in Design. As we wrap up our final episode of Creep Week 2019, I'd like to say to each of you, Happy Halloween from Adventures in Design. Thanks for celebrating our 6th annual Creep Week. I can't believe we've been doing this together for 6 Halloweens now, and I'm happy to have you in my Monster Mash. It's Alex Pardee and Rokum of Rokum Toys. Swing over to futuremetoy.com to see Alex's big Halloween announcement. Everybody, welcome back to Adventures in Design for our final chapter of Creep Week. It's our second year in a row spending Halloween with Alex Pardee.
Ooh.
Oh, so creepy, Alex.
I know.
So creepy.
Alex, see what I'm wearing.
It's a beautiful see-through ghost outfit. What is the best thing that you've done this Halloween season?
This morning we dropped our Kickstarter. That is the best thing that we possibly did. It happened this morning, which is very ironic because it's for a toy called Future Me, and we're recording this to be played in the future, which is now today. So congratulations today. We dropped our Kickstarter.
Right, we're Future Us right now.
I have Alex on the show today. We are joined by Rokum. Rokum, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on here.
So let me understand this, Alex, before we get into our Halloween festivities.
I do want to talk about Halloween. We did some fun stuff, both of us, actually.
Yeah, we've been...
Yeah, you guys have been busy, right?
Yeah.
So you guys released a Kickstarter today.
We did. And it's going great. So thank you, guys.
All pledge levels already sold out. No.
I have so many image files to unlock and turn green because we're just...
All 7 of
through.
You? Thank you.
We're rolling in it. But you guys released a soft vinyl toy or figure.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
Which I love this kind of toy the most. I had a toy store in upstate New York, and we're the biggest kid robot seller outside of the city. And this is what I've always loved. When I was selling the toys, this is what I loved about the toys. People would come in and go, who are these toys for? What are these toys? Why is this toy $70, $80? And I would explain to them, we're using the toy to make sculpture affordable to the masses, right? Like it's like silkscreen is a way that you can get art at an affordable rate, still touched by the artist's hand, but we're able to make copies of it. I'm like, the toy is the same thing. That was a really good argument until the DIY toy company started doing their licensing deals. And like, so explain to me why this Simpsons toy is a sculpture. But I love that as the toy world's gotten sort of disrupted and a lot of the big companies have gone into official licensing, I love that artisans are going back to that original idea of how do we make an affordable sculpture? Am I right? When you look at this, is that kind of what you see?
I don't see it so, like the word sculpture to me sounds really high end.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of it. That is a sculpture, also, but it's not
okay,
high-end.
But I come from a world where I grew up with Spawn toys, which to me are like the most insane sculptures in the world, and they were like $9.
They're nuts.
So like, I have a slightly different outlook on it. I guess it's just as far as instead of more like an art piece or a sculpture, like I just want my art to exist in a different form, other than just flat. And legitimately, I don't have an answer for why should I pay $75 for it? It's like, then don't. Like, that's my answer.
What a sales pitch.
Yeah, it's like, I guess it's just like I don't feel like I need to try to justify it the same way that I don't need to try to justify how much I sell an art print for, because 100%. To me, it's art.
Fair. But so do you see this in your mind? Is this a toy? Is it a collector item? Is it a piece of art? Is it all of those things?
I think it's all. What do you think?
Yeah. I think it's a toy. I mean, I think that's the funny thing about designer vinyl, designer art toys is it art? Is it a toy? It's joining those two worlds that are so kind of separate,
right?
Where one thing's been for kids and one is you have to wait till you know about things to be able to buy it and enjoy it. Merging them is funny. And so I think it's really an excuse for adult collectors to have a reason to stay in the game. When you buy an art toy, you're not buying little kids' toys.
Right.
You know, it's this elevated thing, which is really a trick.
Right.
You know, it's like you can buy whatever you want, but I think it's a funny little thing we convinced ourselves, like, hey, it's okay to buy these or something, when you know, I think the toy we made is really reminiscent of cool creator-owned properties that used to come out back in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
You know, there
were
so many fun creative toys from back then that you don't really see too often anymore. Like you said, everything is so licensed and it's harder to find creative and new things. So
like
I think
Crash Dummies toys.
Right. Was license.
That's IP. That's IP, brother.
I know. I'm
That's IP.
Kidding.
But you bring up a good point though, because it's like if you take any 8-year-old, 10-year-old, mm-hmm. and you show them something, their first question is, what's that from? Like they can't understand that it can only just be the item that's in front of them. In their mind, they've been trained and well-trained by corporate America that every icon that you see is a character from a much larger work of art, a much larger umbrella of a company. But you bring up a great point, Rokum, that back in the day, there were lots of things that you discovered it. It was, you know, grandma took you to the toy department. There was something on the shelf. You're like, I don't know what a Madball is, but it's so gruesome and menacing. I'm going to pick it up. You hadn't seen a cartoon. You hadn't watched a movie. You just fell in love with the object. Like, I bought my first G.I. Joe blind. Just Snake Eyes was so unbelievably cool that I had to go home with it.
Like, He-Man wasn't a property until the toy. Right? Like, it was like the toy basically came first.
Yeah.
And then they created all the.
Yeah, they created
marketing.
A backstory
they
to make
a cartoon
toy.
To market it.
Right.
Right.
And so, you know, we've seen sort of that paradox shift. And, you know, we talk about this a lot, you know, about Disneyland. Like, there's things that are built there that now are emotional to people. Like, it's a small world. But would they ever build that again? And the answer is no.
Just licensed stuff.
That window's gone. But in this world where you can just do whatever you want to do and take chances, this toy right here represents like you putting your artwork into another form. But I always love sort of the debate, because there's got to be some sort of intersection, right, where fine art and commercial art touch, right? There's got to be a crossroads where if you're standing there, you're in the middle of both of those things. And I always like the pieces of art and commercial products that ask that question of, how far in one way is it the other? And it's always eye of the beholder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like how you see it. Mm-hmm. So with this particular piece, this is an illustration that's been around for a minute, right?
I did the original Future Me character to sell t-shirts last year. Everything I do is just to sell something.
But
I'm just kidding.
The full character wasn't on the shirt, right?
No, the full character was just a marketing thing. So like it's long story short, hopefully this doesn't ruin the character.
You gave me a huge SD card, take your time.
but every year I kind of have like a different gimmick for Black Friday, and last year I did Flashback Friday, and mm-hmm. I brought back a bunch of old retired t-shirt designs from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And to be like the host who's bringing these things back from the dead was me from the future. So I created this character, which is me from the future, to bring back these shirts from the dead.
And so then when do you guys get the idea of this would be a fun thing to turn into a physical toy?
I genuinely liked I always liked the character in the illustration, and I always thought it would make a cool toy, but I never really like imagined that it could be. I'm very new to the toy world, and like as much as I love toys and I love art toys and stuff like that, like I have a hard time imagining things in 3D and understanding how things are produced and stuff. And I have very, I have had some toys come out in the past, but I have very limited hands-on work with how they're actually created.
Sure, sure.
And so I didn't really think about it. And then Rocom was like, hey, we should make a toy together. And I was like, okay, cool, that'd be awesome. And then did you pick this one? This was one that I wanted to do, but I know you also...
So it's funny. There was an illustration you posted not too long ago, because I think we got this toy project moving within like 2 or 3 months or something. Like, we moved this thing so fast. But before, there's a series of images that Alex put out at an art show at Gallery 1988 that was for the Astralnauts.
Oh, that's right.
And... you had some illustrations of like these monstrous things in these clear gelatinous blobs. Oh, that's right.
That was the first one.
And so I love the idea of having like this creepy skull image monster demon in this clear vinyl, where you have like clear vinyl encasing the toy inside,
right,
that kind of thing. So that was the first thing. I was like, oh, we could make that drawing as a vinyl toy. And then that kind of sat around for a bit. We were both very busy. And then I think we were just talking and I was like, you know, I think future me would make a really great toy. And then Alex was like, oh, I've been wanting to make that a toy since
I drew it. I was like, I didn't even know that was an option. Yeah, let's do that instead.
And so we just dropped the other thing, you know, which is why we would have needed the vinyl medium.
Right.
And we moved straight into getting to sculpt future me.
Yeah. And he's a toy designer by trade or by skill as well, which I'm not. So like, it's intimidating to me to do anything. Like, anytime I work for a client or I do a toy or anything like that, like, it's like, okay, we need turnarounds, right? Like, which is seeing the art that you drew from 3 different directions,
right,
or 4 different directions,
right,
which scares the hell out of me because I draw something aesthetically for it to be flat right there
and forget about it.
And then like, and I don't even imagine what it possibly could look like if it's turned. Like, in my head, I do, but I don't.
But putting it on paper is pretty tough.
Very hard. So luckily, like, I was pretty intimidated by doing the turnarounds, and Rocom just was like, oh, I'll figure it out. So as a toy designer, he was able to sketch these like loose views, and it helped me be like, oh,
and then that's exactly what it should be.
And then I kind of would redo it, and you know.
So he kind of pushed you in, like, if mathematically, if I'm seeing this in this direction, then if I turn it 90 degrees, it should look something like this. And then that gave you a guide to sort of almost go over and trace, but put the artist touch to it.
Kind of. And also having the knowledge of things like the experience of knowing how the material would be weighted. So it's like just as a heads up, I sketched these a little bit thicker than what they would because we have to have some weight behind the feet. So do what you want to do with that, but know that we need to have a little bit of weight.
Yeah, because we got to pay a little bit of attention to gravity, right?
Yeah.
Because there's nothing worse than a toy in your case that you always have to stand back up or put double stick tape on its feet so that it kind of stays.
And almost everything that I do either has like, it's never leg day for whatever character I draw.
Tiny legs.
It's always just like tiny ass legs.
Right. So I think that was the toughest thing to depart from the original drawing, was that we were going to chunk up the feet on this thing and even the hands and kind of give it a little bit. I always think of Playmates, just like how all those Turtles toys looked and chunking stuff up. And I think it's a really great balance between what Alex drew versus making it a physical toy that can stand up.
I love the idea, too, that it's a funeral plot. You know, like, because you see when you're driving on the highway and you see all those stones, you know, out of the corner of your eye, sometimes there's that part of your brain that goes, oh, there's theoretically a person underneath each one of those stones. And I love the idea of just like cutting that slice of cake out of the earth and be like, this is where you're at, dude. Yep. And so the idea of removing that, and, you know, of course, there's nothing better than a happy headstone. So I love the idea that you guys were able to put this together. Using Kickstarter, that is a way to sort of, I mean, because my estimation would be you guys are going to make this thing regardless, but the Kickstarter for guys like you is a pre-order type thing. It helps the money flow of everything.
Do you want to talk about this?
I mean, so Rocom Toys was born maybe a year ago. I have had 2 successful Kickstarters to jump 2 toy lines. One was based on kind of a flip of a Godzilla character called Jet Jaguar. So I made
which one is kind of like an Ultraman type chassis.
Right, exactly, totally. Yeah. It was like that's in Japan, they saw the popularity of Ultraman, and so the Godzilla Toho, they wanted to create their version of that. So they made a character called Jet Jaguar. So I've always loved that character, and so I made a character called Death Jaguar. You need anywhere from like $7,000 to $10,000 to get molds made for a vinyl toy. And so that's really all I was aiming for, pulling that out myself and then having a bunch of toys no one wants. You know?
Yeah, yeah. That's, I mean, that's just for the mold, too. That's not even for the actual
for the
toys
pouring the vinyl and stuff. Yeah. So
it's expensive, basically.
Yeah, it's very expensive to just go out and do on your own. So what I love about Kickstarter is you can test out to see if anyone wants the thing. So if you're... if your project doesn't fund, it might be smart to just not make that toy.
It's true. Yeah, I mean, and if you can't get that sort of, you know,
the audience for it. Going, yeah. And so I've been lucky enough to where I did that one. It funded. It sold out of its first run, and I have another run on the website right now. And then I worked with an artist by the name of Tom Neely, and he did an old punk rock comic called Henry and Glenn Forever. And so we made these kind of... these Japanese robot versions of those characters.
Of Henry Rollins, Glenn Danzig,
yeah.
But it looks kind of...
it's like Astro Boy.
Astro Boy, that's what...
and Gigantor,
yeah. But with sort of, I mean, the Rollins is pretty subtle, but the Glenn Danzig as Astro Boy is hilarious.
It's crazy how accurate being Danzig.
It's very fun. And that one, when I clicked on that item... Is it in production right now? Or?
It's being painted right now. So I wanted to ship that this month. It looks like it'll be shipping from the factory to me in like a week or so.
Wow.
So
very, very cool.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Hey friends, today's episode is made possible by our friends over at SendPro Online from Pitney Bowes. A fantastic service designed to save you both time and money, which really is the core of making a profitable and successful business. Just imagine never being held down by shipping again. No more in the middle of creative workflow having to look at the clock and say, I've got to get to the post office because it's closing in the next 20 minutes, only to get there and find a long line with somebody at the front of it that is an adult that seems to have never shipped anything before and is completely unaware of the rules that seem to always be changing. SendPro Online from Pitney Bowes is simple. Just click send and save for as low as $4.99 per month, where you can send envelopes, flats, and packages right from your desk, and you are back to business in no time. When you log in and look at all comparable shipping rates, you know with confidence that you're paying the most efficient amount of money for your shipping, and you also know that it's not going to take you any time to print the label from your desk and set it on your front porch. And as promised, with using SendPro Online from Pitney Bowes for just $4.99 a month, you just save both time and money. Go to pb.com/design to access the special offer for a free 30-day trial plus a free 10-pound scale to help you get started. That's pb.com/design. Experience shipping made simple with the free trial of SendPro Online from our friends at Pitney Bowes.
Tough for me to know that I have my... well, I'm excited for those toys to come in, but at the same time, I'm running this new Kickstarter to get the next toy going. But I mean, just going back to back, you know?
But the sort of the cool thing is that each one is sort of its own business under your business umbrella, right?
Right,
like, 'cause
right.
The pre-orders are there. You have your head count. You added some extra on,
right,
depending on your cash surplus, so that you'll have some at DesignerCon or
exactly,
wherever you're
yep.
at that people mm-hmm. can grab and go. And, you know, I interviewed Larry Bama, who invented the wide skateboard truck, and he owned Tracker Trucks. And he put out a book, Tracker, 40 years of Tracker, or I forgot what the actual anniversary was. And this is a guy that's incredibly wealthy. Like, his home was unbelievable. And I said, Larry, why the Kickstarter? And he goes, because it's the pre-order system. You know, he's like, the books are made.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't need the money to get the books done, but it just helps line everybody up. It helps get all your ducks in a row. And in a world where we're saturated with click, buy, sell, follow, heart, tag, comment below, there is something about adding a sense of urgency of here's the window to jump on board to help out an artist.
Well, I think I've been very attracted to Kickstarter for a long time, but I never had the right project that I wanted to do because I never just wanted to jump on and be like, well, I feel like I'm going to do this, so give me $5,000, right? Like, I wanted it to be like a good thing. But what attracted me actually the most was I started noticing some Kickstarter campaigns that were basically turning the shopping experience into like a game where everybody kind of wins, right?
Right.
Like, it's like sure, like we genuinely could have just put this up on my site and pre-ordered it and used the pre-order money to fund the thing, which isn't the smartest thing to do at all, but we could have done it. But at the same time, if we chose Kickstarter because we could not only have this toy up for sale, but we have a bunch of interactive unlockables. We have some goals that we're setting. We have some really fun things up there that you'll be able to see on the page now. But like, basically,
did you mind if we talk about some of those real quick?
No, we should talk about some. Yeah.
Because I love that if the toy's not in your budget, but you believe in Alex and what Rocom's trying to do and you just want to support them, for $1 you can get a PDF coloring page.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's just a way to just put money in the jar, like, I like this, I just don't have money for everything. And then the next one up is what, $5?
It's $20.
$20.
Yeah. And you get an art print, right?
Yeah. You get an art print.
Which is basically the price of an art print.
Right. But so, it's lining it up where it's like you're because there's people that don't have all the room anymore, or they just don't have the funds. And so, but if you believe in an artist or a relationship, you want to see it go all that way. The one that I was interested in is $300 for a hand paint, like a custom painted one with your name on the bottom. That's a tremendous value.
On the tombstone.
Yeah, right on the tombstone. Yeah. So
that's the name's on the tombstone.
It'd be future them.
Right.
Wow.
So future me isn't always meant to be like, you're buying a toy of Alex. It's future anyone.
Right.
Because, I mean, skeletons are unisex, right? So you're buying future me.
And I also love that you can get the model or the mold in just white. Or black. Right.
Mm-hmm. We have a and couple of blank colors.
Yeah, there's two blank colors. It's essentially trying to open it up to where, if within your budget, you can own the toy, you know?
Yeah.
So if, you know, the painted ones are a little bit pricier, you know, but if you have $60, you can have the toy.
Which
in
a great
pure bone color, which honestly, it looks like a, like you said before, a nice sculpture of this
character. Yeah, like a marble sculpture or something.
I was interviewing Joe Ledbetter, and he has a whole case of just white toys, you know, just non-color toys. And I asked him, I said, why does that case look better than all the saturated stuff that we spend all this time picking out? Yeah. It's because it interacts with the light around you, and it looks different throughout the day. You guys also did my favorite version, which the version I'm kickstarting is the noir version.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, my Lord. Black
and white. Grayscale. I struggle constantly to what I do, strictly black and white stuff or brightly colored stuff. So we got to do both.
In the real world, I love a physical item that's gone out of its way to be painted black and white. There's sort of a weird juxtaposition there I love. But have you ever noticed that if you put a black and white photo or a painting on your Instagram, you can watch the likes just go down. Like, people's thumbs love bright colors.
Here's the interesting thing too about black and white stuff is you can't just turn an object black and white because the values of colors are so similar.
Yes.
So if you just took a photo and made it black and white, it's going to look like shit.
It's really
so
bad,
Like with specifically with this one, like the green and the brown are very similar. So if we just turned it black and white, it would just look like a big gray piece of
mush,
whatever. Yeah. So we actually physically redid each element to make it the right value of that. So that's cool.
Yeah. So everything can stand out. I think it's not so much as you turn off the color, you know, you're desaturating a color image, but noir is really about bringing about how light hits a sculpture and like really making it look like, oh, this could be a character from an old black and white horror movie or something.
Yeah. One of my favorite photos is that been circling the internet for years, but it's the Munsters set.
Yes.
But in color.
Yes.
And you can see that, like, you know, like the giant polar bear is green and the staircase is red. Like, you can see all these things because they're different values that when they play in black and white, it looks all good.
They show up right.
Yeah.
Well, it's like our mutual friend of all of ours, Dave Cook, Bone Thrower.
Mm.
He's colorblind.
Is he?
Yes.
I don't think I remember that.
I didn't know
he's colorblind, and his system used to be that his girlfriend would lay out the markers for him.
Okay.
You know, because he uses the color pencils or the markers, and those would be laid out for him. And so he would just keep picking, he'd keep them in that same order and keep picking them up in that order to keep an idea of what his balances are. But when you look at him as an artist, such an amazing color palette. And that's because that's where he sees the contrast. And I'm like, how the hell did you come up with such a happy accident?
That's awesome.
And you've made enamel pins for him before,
I love that guy. Yeah, he's great. And every piece of his has so many colors in it, mm-hmm. which for us making enamel pins, I'm like, this is a lot of colors. Yeah. But they always end up making the most beautiful enamel pins.
And your pin company is at yesterdays.co over Correct. On Instagram.
Right, right.
And you're a partner in that business, right?
Right. So me and two friends, we started Yesterday's Enamel Pins about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we started with a handful of just strange designs that we thought were funny, thought looked cool. But our biggest debut after we had created the company was Bone Thrower, Alex, and Skinner. They each did an artist edition design, and we released them at DesignerCon about 5 years ago.
That's awesome.
I don't think either of them compete with like the ET and a burrito. Right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little embarrassed at what our best sellers are, but I come up with some weird stuff.
The first wave of enamel pins, though, was that dream that everybody always had is finally a way to sell JPEGs to your friends.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what's exciting. Like, and going into like the DIY toy world as well, like I feel like one of the most exciting things about creating art now that wasn't in existence even 10 years ago was the outlets that you can have, right?
Yes.
Like it's like sure, like and now it almost kind of sucks that not, I don't want to say not very many people, but like just painting or drawing something on a flat surface doesn't get the same emotional response anymore than it did years ago.
No.
Because there is all these other outlets. But at the same time, that means that like you can, everything starts on paper, so you can design something and then you can bring it to life in a pin, you can bring it to life in a toy, you can make a 3D print of it, you can make a weird augmented reality of that character. Like there's all these things that you can do now, which is awesome.
But it always starts on paper, right?
Like you would think so, or on an iPad.
On digital paper. But you know, think about this. 10 years ago, if I said, oh, we have this funny idea, we should make a pen out of it, we would have no idea how to make a pen.
No, we'd have to call Disney.
Yeah, but today, you're like, oh, that's a funny joke. Let's just get 100 pins and give them out to our friends. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, goes to show like how fast things go. And you know, you bring up a good point where tactile. We've been able to get into toys and pens and patches, and you know, the other people have gotten into making stationery sets and leather cases, like what Benny Gold made to put your brushes and your pens in. That there is something about. You know, I was at Gallery 1988 Friday for a friend's opening, and you kind of walk through and you look at all the art, and you're like, I love all of the art, and I like seeing it, but it's, and I hate saying this, but it's almost become a more intimate experience on Instagram where I'm in the quiet of my home. I can zoom in and look at it. The colors are more saturated. I mean, there are some things that are painted by hand where you want to see it in real life because it's the painter's touch and the texture of it. But we just see images all day long, every single day. So it's when it's burnt into wood, you're like, how did they do that? Yeah.
You miss the scale a lot of the times too with just a painting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So like, and especially online. So with something that you can hold or touch or put in your pocket or have a giant sculpture of, that adds to the experience, I think.
Scale is definitely one of those things where, you know, you take something that's very simple, but you do it on an 8-story, 6-story building, mm-hmm. and it becomes like, wow, that's crazy that those three dots are that big, right?
Yeah.
And there are other artists who would take an 8-story building and put more detail into it, but I'm always a sucker for the like, man, that is so big for something that's just giant. So benign and kind of boring. So for what you guys are doing, you have the Kickstarter that comes out today for Halloween.
I do, which actually there was one other thing I wanted. We were bringing up kind of like the making shopping fun thing, which... one of the things that I'm really excited about is the fact that like we have basically any tier that you do that you buy a toy, whether it's a blank toy, whether it's a standard one, whether it's a $300 crazy one, like basically the more people that we get to buy the toy, basically that adds to the free items that you get along with it. So we don't have any like more like higher end rewards. It's like we'll have like an enamel pin that's unlocked, a t-shirt that'll be unlocked, stuff like that. But that's not like stuff that you have to pay extra for. Mm. It's all stuff that you'll get for free automatically if you help us build this
audience, right?
No, that's amazing.
So it's like the more times we can get people to share it and the more people that back it, the more free stuff you get for donating, right? For buying the toy.
Oh, that's fantastic. So,
and some of them are even actual additional accessories for the toy itself. And one of the funniest ones.
Yeah.
I mean, it's on the page now, so it's fine. But the funniest one is the Future Me for Millennials, which is instead of a tombstone, you get an urn.
And so it has the same face on it.
It's the same face. So it's like the whole, it's just basically a second toy. Right, it's just you have Future Me, which is old school, then you have Future Me for Millennials, which is the urn,
which is a little urn toy. Yeah,
that's amazing.
So it's nice that I mean, some things we unlock will be just things that now we have the funding to make a new colorway of the toy that you
sure,
can buy.
Sure,
but there's a lot of things in there where if enough backers help us out with the project, you're gonna just get. That package you get in 8 months is going to have a t-shirt in it, pins in it, a special sticker, you know, and those are the simple things. But on top of that, I mean, there's add-ons where the skull head can get swapped out for a Brightmare style head.
Oh, wow.
You know, for like, for Harvey, you know, Alex's dog, yeah. His little skeleton yeah. Harvey head.
Which is really sad to me.
My favorite, okay. Which I can't imagine we'll get to, but yeah. The Last Action Hero one, which if this gets that far, there's going to be a removable arm that has a bazooka and the skull head has like a Rambo style bandana on it.
Oh my God.
Which
that's amazing.
Would just be so rad.
We spent a lot of time watching 90s and 80s toy commercials
right,
and just
right.
being like, how can we nail it? And one of the things that we noticed was there's a lot of boulders being dropped on toys
yeah.
in those old commercials.
Yeah.
Like there's always just a toy sitting there. And then if it's the bad guy, there's always a boulder just falls on him. And the kid's like, you're dead, evil snake. Just like, all right, cool.
I would watch those commercials and be like, I want the toy. But I more so want the toy to go out to the flower bed
yeah.
and build a prison to try to put Destro in. Oh, right. He got away again.
And a babbling brook that runs yeah. through yeah. it all.
I used to think when I was a kid that the kid's payment for being in the commercial was that they not only got the toy, but they got the set.
The play
like,
set.
That was just oh, my
like,
God.
That was like my dream.
But now when you're an adult, you realize that, you know, a guy in his 30s or 40s, like, you know, like almost went to a draftsman table and laid out, okay, well, we'll put the mulch here. We'll run a creek this way. We'll put rocks here. I think I got this, guy. It's like, you yeah. know, that was somebody, a group of adults' job yeah. to build that. Put four kids with bowl haircuts in front of them. Just, yep. just say awesome when Destro yeah. comes by, you know?
I mean, that was literally me a month ago. Yeah, we had to build a graveyard set. Yeah. So I was like, oh
yeah,
I'm
for the video.
Yeah. yeah, yeah. So we built all that from scratch, man. Like I was sitting there learning how to carve foam for terrain and like, we found this stuff called fairy grass, which yeah. was like, you know, it's not flat like the train sets and all the Warhammer stuff. Like we needed something for the scale of that toy to look a little bit smaller than grass.
Yeah.
And so we found that stuff and it worked great. And then 3D printed those headstones and yeah.
3D printing too is the other equation where you can actually, if you guys hit those price points that you want, you don't have to call up China and be like, can we get, you know, 50 smiling urns sent to us? You know, you can call a guy that has 3D printing capabilities right. and get those done, you know, across town. What you guys are doing, though, I love the idea of making shopping fun. And, you know, as an adult, you get to this moment where you shouldn't be spending your money on dumb things. You should be putting money away for retirement and savings and insurance. All this just stuff that just sucks the life out of everything, right? And for those of us that live in this part of the world, it's like, how am I ever going to buy a home? You know, and put away $3,000 a month and I'm still not even getting anywhere closer, which is an insane thing. So it's like, how do you make shopping fun? You know, if you got an extra 50 bucks on your paycheck or 100 bucks on your paycheck, how do you make it fun? Things like this, Kickstarter things, getting involved, sharing so that you can earn more. Like when we owned our toy store, we did a thing called the Lucky 13 Club. Every 12 or 13 blind box toys that you bought, $9.99 and below, you got a punch on your card. At the end of it, you could pick any blind box toy for free. And it was just that thing. Like, yeah, it was a smart business move because people were like, I only need three more to get the punch. But it was the fun of people coming in.
Get that Ken Griffey Jr. Upper Deck.
Yeah. But it was the fun of seeing people come in on their lunch break and be like, it's $7. And it's $7 that brings me joy.
Yeah.
So you guys are doing a good job of doing that. You're also rewarding people to get there quick. Today, there are a limited amount of early birds, right? So yes. you can buy right. in at these.
So you can even
points.
Save. So you can get everything for even cheaper.
There you go.
So I think that stress, although by this time we've already hit midnight, but we were stressing that, you know, we do have a midnight launch, so we're well into it now, but on Wednesday night, that's when we kick this off. And so we're hoping that just to reward those people that knew about this ahead of time, that have been paying attention, that if you're there when we launch, you know, you get the toy at a cheaper price.
But this is where I think every small business is at and every artist is at, because there is just a saturation of media and marketing coming at everybody. So you, everybody's responsibility to what they do for a living as a maker is, you've got to find a way to bring your audience along with you and make it fun for them. Because quite simply, for in, like for me in the podcast, you know, this has been my full-time job now. November 14th will be 5 years of full-time podcasting.
Wow.
Thank you very much. If I put out an episode and the guest doesn't talk about the episode, and the audience doesn't get involved talking about the episode, for me, I look at it as it was a complete waste of my work day.
The tree fell and no one heard it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like the perfect combo for me is I share it, the audience talks about it, and whoever's on the show that day talks about it. And then that gets that sort of that kinetic energy going where you feel like you're not wasting your time. And I spend more time now trying to figure out how to make that thing happen almost than I do figuring out like writing the interviews or writing the questions. Like after, 1,050 episodes, I got this part kind of dialed down, but bringing the audience with me, that becomes harder every year.
Because it feels like it's out of your control too.
It is. Yeah. And I love seeing business models like what you guys are doing. Like, hey, we're small. We're kickstarting this because we don't have all the money. Get involved with us. Help us out, and we'll try to throw you a bone and give you more free stuff in August when your package shows up.
I think, like, Kickstarter aside, I feel like maybe it could very well have been, like, low self-confidence, which I've had my entire career. But, like, I've always felt the need to take care of my customer.
Sure.
Like, overcompensatingly, right? Like almost every time I have a sale, it's like you get a free pin if you buy it. Like it's like it's like it's not a desperate thing, but it feels like it's like I want to, like, you guys have like 17 million art prints and t-shirts you could pick from, but if you pick this one, I'll give you something even extra for free. So like I've always done that, and and I think that it's worked, and so I feel like that's what we're carrying over into this.
Get out of here with your stiff, expensive pillowcase shaped t-shirt, because Jack Prince has got custom t-shirts that are affordable, soft, and fitted using next level blanks. Don't let cheap t-shirt prices fool you into buying just that, cheap and ugly t-shirts. Next Level 3600s are the t-shirt of choice used by many bands and brands that I know that you love. And did I mention Jack Prince's quick, printed in just 2 days after proof? Get a dozen as low as $7.23 per shirt with free shipping. And if you need less shirts, only pay $8.83 for 4 dozen or $11.75 for 2 dozen. And as I said, all orders ship with free standard shipping. JackPrince.com/circle of trust. Quality shirts printed fast and affordable, which means profitable and convenient for you. JackPrince.com/circle of trust.
I think it's also, it's just being so thankful that this is a thing that doesn't exist. Like, you know, and if you are down for it and you enjoy it and want it, that's the only way it can exist.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool that when you do get that package in August, that like you'll know that it wouldn't have happened without you.
Yeah.
Instead
Absolutely.
Of something that's a pre-order where like you throw your money at it, don't talk about it, and then you're surprised you bought it a year ago.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it comes in the mail and you're like, oh yeah, I got this.
Or whereas, 3 years and something.
No, I think there's something for I think there's something though for treating your customers as they are your investors or your business partners. You know, it's like I start out every episode, hey friends.
Yeah.
Because I really feel like the people that listen to this show, they're definitely not my client. I don't try not to think of them as customers. I really try to think of them, these are my friends that believe in the show, they pay for the show, and I work my ass off to try to get them the best content possible, you know? And like sometimes my wife would be like, what are you doing? I'm like, there's not enough bonus content. I gotta go back there and write something up, or I gotta come up with something. She's like, they'll let it slide. I'm like, but I can't.
Because
I can't let them down because I appreciate their business so much. So I'm excited that you guys were able to bring this thing to life, able to make it fun. Lots of different levels for everybody to get involved wherever it's comfortable for them. And are you guys gonna be active in the update process? Like, putting down money today in October, I'm not going to see this hopefully until August 2020. will I get to see photos of molds coming in and out or get updates from the artists?
Yep. We're going to try to be as interactive as we possible. And luckily, both of us are very easy to reach on social media as well. So, like, obviously, like,
it's just a DM away.
And we will be updating people along the line just to kind of reassure, like we've set the timeline, which you can see on the page. There's a rough timeline. That's based on your experience, Real Call.
I mean, running two toys already, I'm confident in when people are going to get their toys. I think also a lot of times when people buy into a Kickstarter, you have to put full faith in the people that they're going to come clean on everything they said they do. And so for me, both of my projects have luckily been on time every time, you know? And so I'd hope that that puts some trust in people that I know what I'm doing. Like, also every month I always let people know this is where things are at right now. I also tell them, hey, for a couple months we're going to be radio silent because it takes a month to make metal molds, you know? So it'll be quiet for a bit, but you could even check on my older projects. There's, I think, like at least 15 to 20 updates that you get all the way across the 8 months.
So. Yeah. That's why one of the things that, you know, when Kickstarter first came out, I was pretty, I trashed it pretty hard on the show because I kept seeing people that were like, well, I don't know if people give me money, I'll make something. And it made me angry because...
Because it's the American Idol thing.
Yes. And Alex, like... You've worked hard for a very long time. You've created a very dedicated following. People that have never met you feel like you're their friend. And
I am.
Exactly. And they love following along with your life and everything that you do. So that you're sort of brokering that trust on, you know me, you know my work, you know I'm a solid dude. Give me $80 and faith, and I will work my absolute ass off for the next year to ship you something that's as amazing as I can make it. And I think that business model makes Kickstarter really smart and really awesome. And it almost seems that now that that platform has been around 5 or 6 years, the cream has risen to the top, right? Like nowadays when I see people doing Kickstarters, it's people that already have auditioned in life, if you will, and done something that people believe in that are like, we're doing this. This is a way for you to get involved. It almost seems like everybody realized this shit's really hard and that doesn't exist as much.
Yeah.
Which now makes it a cool platform, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think you, like, that was one of the reasons why I was intimidated by doing it in the past was because I have had bad experiences with Kickstarters, right? Like, I've donated stuff and it's never shown up or gets canceled and whatever. But regardless, like, it's, the platform exists. And I think that there are a bunch of people that have figured out how to utilize it without just exploiting it. And that's what's exciting to me.
And I think this with anything, you know, you come up with, as a creator or a business person, you come up with a great idea and it takes a little while for the dust to settle for people to be like, oh, this is an amazing way to do a pre-order or an amazing way to get involved with my audience. Like, it sometimes just takes a while for like the right people to look at something and figure out this is the efficient way to use something. I'm curious for you guys, the goal of $14,000, how did you come to that number? Because If I know my way around business, you get a number and you work backwards,
It costs about about $100 to make the toy, and then I take $13,900, right? Like, that's what it is, and you get nothing.
Right, yeah. I actually sell stuff of mine.
Yeah, he's paying for back, all the pre-production. Yeah, like,
for all my graveyard set.
That was totally... We really, really sat down and were based on his past two projects that we've done. We wanted to basically... just figure out the minimum amount it would take to make what, the 200
toys? To make 200 toys.
And figure in like, okay, worst case scenario, best case scenario, we get this amount of money, it goes to 200 toys exactly, and that's what we do.
Right, we get it on our shelf, people that like it get it, and then we're done. Because if you don't have that, then you don't have a toy at all. So it's really the bare minimum with my factory of what we can get made. And so if you look at it, that's also why the early bird backers for the standard edition, there's 200 slots. So if we sell 200 slots, then we can make the toy.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then the one of the exciting things is that obviously the more backers and the more toys of the standard edition that we can get sold,
Any backer
that don't that helps us out, like, basically it slightly lowers the cost of the toy, which allows us to create
to
all the bonus stuff
that
we're doing. It allows us to pay for the, you know, if 1,000 people back it, we have to make 1,000 shirts now, right? Which, so we're using that money, which is not, it's just it's going to come out of the same budget, right?
Right, right.
So now we're adding on to it, but the more we're increasing
the more the customer
the quantity,
gets,
the more we're kind of lowering the cost of the toy, which allows us to put more into the extra stuff.
There's a part of me that loves that equation, right? Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like making the podcast and talking to people and figuring out all that. But there's something about that mathematical thing of figuring out what that number is, working backwards. What's the bare minimum we need to get this off the ground? But then if the good happens to us and we get to 1,200 and we're 1,000 over, now what can we do with that extra money? Like that's art all into itself.
Yeah, it is. And then we found ourselves actually having to tone down what we were doing because we were going so crazy. Like at one point,
I'm not even going to say what we have because
we still want to add some stuff. There was like, we had like 50 things that we were just like, dude, they would be so sick. We're going to have like 19 RoboCop versions of it, right? Like it'd be cool. But what we started doing was like, okay, everything we add increases the shipping. Everything we add increases this cost. Like,
right,
like every dollar that somebody spends on the toy is another 7 cents we have to take out for taxes, plus another Kickstarter takes a fee. Like, mm-hmm. There's a lot of hidden costs in it.
Sure.
But we've hopefully factored it all into where we'll be okay. If, as long as we can get those 200 toys funded, we'll be good.
Right.
But, you know, this is a business model that you see companies that are holding cash or at least large lines of credit. You see a lot of people switching over to pre-ordering and Kickstarter. And there's a lot of this that's happening these days. And I'm curious if it's to make money flow easier, if it's to get that sense of urgency going. You know, I see some companies that I'm like, you have the money. Why are you doing this? But I think there's
an interactive journey, like what you're talking about. It gives you a window of 30 days to basically interact with everybody and talk about it, right?
Right.
Like and it's cool. And people and it also, I think Kickstarter, like I kind of have like I have a habit of trying to donate to a Kickstarter project at least once a month. Like whether it's been karmatically or anything, but it's been, I mean, I've done it for, I think that I've funded or like donated to like 30 or 40 Kickstarters over the past couple of years, just because I like them. It's awesome. But also because Kickstarter it's a store that's indescribable. Like you can go to the front page and just browse, right?
Right.
And be like, oh, what kind of weird stuff do they have on there? It's like
it's
I can help this guy get a comic book made. I can help this girl get an animated series made, or I can buy dice. This is weird. Or like the other day, this is really cool. This artist named JJ Harrison created a, I don't know how to describe it. It's basically a sketch board, like an artist sketch board, but with that holds an iPad Pro in it. Like,
so that it's so one that it's solid flat. Surface. So yeah,
giant,
I saw that.
So
one.
It has a drawing surface so you can do it. And like that, to me, my biggest complaint was like, I love sitting on the couch with Chloe and watching TV and drawing
holding
on my
an
iPad
sucks.
But I'm doing this and I'm cramping up my arms and everything. And if I could just have it on. So like that was a surprise to me. And I was like, this is amazing. So like, I didn't know about that.
Oh, there's been some amazing businesses mm-hmm. and products that have been launched through there. And it's just such an amazing time where it's like, it used to be, you know, I always think of like the honeymooners, right? Like those two knuckleheads always had great ideas, but they had no connections and no seed money. So it was just this great idea. And, you know, everybody's had an uncle who's like, my uncle had the greatest idea ever. And then one day he saw an Atari 2600. He's like, these motherfuckers, that was my idea.
Dude, you remember?
And now you can make that move.
Do you remember in like they might still have them, but like in the 90s when I watched Jerry Springer all the time, there would always be these commercials that are like, do you have an idea?
Yes.
Like Will.
Do you remember the guy in the question mark suit?
Yes, the question mark. Great. He was like Mr. Patton or something.
He was always
like,
walking around a fountain.
Yeah, it was insane. But it was just like, we'll help you with your idea. We'll help you get it off the ground. And it's like, I want to see the files of all the phone calls of those people that they got of like what people wanted to make. But yeah, if like that's what Kickstarter is.
Yeah. Right? God, you bring up a good point of what were some of those phone calls they had to sift through.
I would love that.
To get a couple of winners. Man,
I want
to
stuff my grandma, put her on the shelf in an attack pose.
I don't know that we can do that.
And then patent it. It's like, what? You want to patent your grandma?
So, Rockham, as the pin world has gotten bigger,
Yes, yes. It's so big.
Has that made it easier or tougher for you guys?
We're very lucky that we were early on in the pin craze.
Yeah, 5 years ago was pretty right good timeline.
Right. So, of course, it's very saturated. Anyone and everyone can make a pin. They know how to get them out there. So the experience that we've created with Yesterdays in sourcing and finding the factories that don't make crap and making sure the quality's on point, the details are good.
Sure.
So that's one thing we always stand by, is that our pins are good quality. But from a business standpoint, the market is so saturated that direct to consumer is very low. You know, we do a lot of shows and we do great at those. Just direct person to business or whatever.
At DesignerCon last year, I bought one item. And it was a pin from your booth.
I appreciate it, yes.
But it was, you had the one item I was looking for. I'm like, I need a little more Skinner in my life.
Right. And everyone needs more Skinner.
Yeah, you know what I did with it? My car has like a little shelf under the steering wheel, you know, where you're supposed to put something. And I put the pin there when I got into my car that day, and it just sit there. And every time I get in the car, it's like Skinner just like, where are we going, buddy?
You know what we're doing? You know what we're doing this year for Decon?
What's that?
Can I tell him? Skinner's body.
Now I know what I'm buying this year at Decon. That would be
what
amazing.
What I love is that's going to be every pin that's just a head's body.
Yeah, it's just a body.
Yeah, t-shirt and jeans.
So you're saying that you do well at those shows, and to walk people through it, your booth was like a 10 by 10, 10 by 20?
At Decon or at San Diego?
At Decon.
At Decon, we had a corner booth, 10 by 10. And
covered in pins.
We had brought a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We create these vertical boards to kind of display what we have. But what I was saying before, with everything so saturated now, with everyone making pins, we're really lucky that we make pins for a lot of companies and people that we grew up loving. Like, we're the official pin licensee for the Misfits, for David Bowie, the Walking Dead comics, Judge Dredd comics, like so many
Walking Dead comics,
the comic
Skybound.
Yeah,
so that would be different than AMC.
Correct. That's separate, right?
Yeah.
So there are people that have the TV show license,
right?
Which is very funny, because it's like we make a pin of the Lucille bat, and then there's another one that's a bat, you know?
Yeah.
It's something else. But it's great that we've kind of built these relationships, and it's totally with just these people that we get along with. Like, I mean, you get out there and you try and get Misfits merch that isn't just the Fiend skull or the logo, you won't find it.
Right.
But we have a great relationship with the band to where they let us create art for them. I mean, we made a crazy design of this Super Fiend graphic where it was the Fiend skull with like this cowl, like a superhero cowl, and you'd never think that's an official design.
Yeah.
But it's cool. They trust us with that brand and let us kind of make cool stuff with it.
Can you guys, are you at the level where you have the deal with the factory where you can customize the pin backers?
The packaging?
The plastic that goes on the pin.
Oh, right. You know, we've always thought about that, like the Mickey ear shape at Disney.
Which is the ultimate Disney move of like, guess what? We even designed the back of the pin, you assholes.
Right, right. We know how to do that. We realize that with that money, we'd rather make 20 more designs.
See, I always wanted to make a pin that was, because I got this idea from the old punk band Born Against, because they had a 12-inch.
Keep it off record. Someone's going to do it.
Yeah, man.
I mean, I don't care.
Yeah, this guy. Yeah. He steals everything.
Please steal this. They had a 12-inch where when you put it down on your record player, the center sticker of the record was Christ's hand. So the record would go through his hand and you're crucifying him.
Oh, my God.
And I always thought it would be rad if you just had to put a little hand on the back of the pin and just right through it.
That's really funny. I was thinking just taking those baby hands and putting them on a record player. Right.
Hey friends, thank you so much for listening to today's episode with Alex Pardee and Rokum. I hope that you've swung over to futuremetoy.com and support this Kickstarter. And look at all the hard work that these guys have put into something that at the end of the day is just about having fun. Fun for them to make, fun for us to follow along with, and a fun item to purchase. I've kickstarted my Noir version that I can't wait to get. And if you share any Creep Week episode using the hashtag COT, till death, I'm giving away one Future Me toy from Alex Pardee and Rokum Toys. Coming up in part two of our Halloween episode, we have an hour more of conversation that you can get when you become a member of the Circle of Trust at AID.network. In part two, we really kind of get deep into the whole idea of balance of life, working hard for things, and trying to figure out along the way what really matters and deserves your hard time, and what things you just have to learn to let go. One of the things I enjoy about my relationship with Alex is we have a similar bond of being maybe a little too ambitious. And if we think that anything would get us an inch further along, we would be willing to kill ourselves to get that extra inch. But inch by inch, mile by mile, late night by late night, panic attack by panic attack, it all starts to look like maybe it's not going to add up in your 40s. So we share that common idea of just how far we've gone to get to where we're at. And Rokum also reveals his crazy day job that he has and gets into so many details about his own unique balance of life of having a for real like career and balancing his pen company and toy company in the after hours. He's doing what we call the side hustle. All of this and so much more is available when you become a supporter and a member of Adventures in Design by joining the Circle of Trust. Sign up today at AID.network. We now return to Alex Pardee and Rokum Toys on Adventures in Design.
Actually, that's something Justin Ishmael came up with. He's also a toy maker and mm-hmm. works on a lot of great stuff. But he
used to work for Mondo, right?
Yeah, he was creative director there. But now he has his own brand and he does a lot of stuff out of Bottleneck Gallery. But he made these little collectible toys that you could put on the spindle. And so as you play your record, like this little character spins around.
Oh, that's cool.
And
throws up eventually.
yeah, from spinning.
I can't do anything that goes in circles. I rode a merry-go-round for the first time in forever 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, oh my God, if this thing doesn't stop,
oh, really?
I'm throwing up. It was a merry-go-round. Yeah. And I wasn't even on one of the ponies. I was sitting on the bench on the merry-go-round. Absolutely the lamest ride at Disneyland. I'm like, if this thing doesn't stop.
And stuff then
too? Oh, no, no.
Oh, see,
no.
You're my dude. we just, speaking of Halloween, segueing into.
Right. Alex has never been to Knott's Scary Farm.
Neither have I.
Okay.
Okay.
I've gone to Universal religiously, Universal Halloween Horror Nights for, you know, 15,
every year,
15 years, whatever. I've missed a couple of years, but been to the Hollywood one, been to Florida. Love it. It's my favorite night of the year, right? And because, to me, Universal, with their licenses and with their production value and everything, like, it couldn't get any better, right? It's the Disneyland of Hollywood Horror Nights. So I've always gotten like, hey, you should go to Knott's Scary Farm. It's like cool because they're a little more creative because they don't have licenses. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's it's cheaper, so I'm probably not gonna like it, right? Not that I'm not gonna like it, but I'm just like, I go to Universal.
There's no
you go to the best. $500 instead.
You don't go to a guy who's driving around in a Tesla and be like, have you ever rode in a Hyundai? It's fantastic.
Yeah. And so, but I have always been curious. And I've watched some YouTube videos and stuff. And I was just like, yeah, it looks pretty fun. And I love being scared. Like, I love those haunted, not the extreme haunted houses. I just love screaming when someone taps me on the shoulder. So we finally found a day where we all got to go to Knott's Scary Farm. And I was just like, I was expecting it to be okay. I was like, yeah, this is going to be okay. I loved it.
Because of its sort of DIY?
Because of their... It reminded me a lot of, I guess, just like a hunger for creativity of like what we do. Like I don't want to just like it's, I grew up like, and I was always inspired by pop culture. So of course I've done a Batman drawing. I've done a drawing of a gremlin and Ren and Stimpy, like things that have inspired me in the past. And when I do, it's like, it doesn't matter how good the drawing is. It's like so many people just love it. They're just like, I love that because it's Ren and Stimpy.
Right.
I love that.
Right.
And it's a battling feeling. Like the creative side of it is fun. It's like, I did this because I'm inspired by it. And it was fun to do. But then the reaction being so much bigger than anything that I've ever done originally. Sometimes it's a little like disheartening.
It's soul crushing.
Like, yeah. It's like, oh man. You're like, and then so you have to like put this effort into not just falling into like being like, all right, I'm the Ren and Stimpy guy now. Every time. Right. All the time. And so like, So Knott's Scary Farm felt a lot like my struggle, right?
Yeah.
It felt like a lot like you have to like, if you can wow somebody with like this, that's just like a made up maze yeah. of
we don't have Freddie and Jason. Yeah, like, we have no like, licenses.
And not only was the wow factor there, it was like it, just the creativity behind it. Like every doorway was different. Every character was. It was really fun.
Hey friend, if you're not a member of the Circle of Trust, unfortunately, this is where we have to part ways. But don't worry, Adventures in Design will return next week, November 4th through 8th, with Adobe Max Week on Adventures in Design. Interviews, reviews, and breaking news all captured from the Adobe Max floor, presented by Seltra, the creative management platform. But if you're a member of the Circle of Trust, you don't have to wait till next week to hear an episode. You just have to simply log in where we have an hour more of conversation with Alex Pardee and Rokum Toys. But if this is where we part ways, I say to you, Happy Halloween. Be safe tonight.